The following interview was recorded for CFRO The Pulse, Vancouver Co-op Radio's daily news show. The Pulse airs Monday to Friday at 7 a.m. on 100.5 FM and streaming live at cooperadio.org.
We're talking with the BC Community Alliance. An organizer, Markiel Simpson, has been organizing against racism in Vancouver schools for years and is also involved in the movement to end the Vancouver Police Department's school liaison program, which is currently being examined by Vancouver City Council. Thank you so much for joining us here on Co-op Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about the history of the Alliance.
Sure. So the BC Community Alliance was formed out of, as the result or lack of action that took place after a racist bomb threat incident that took place at a Vancouver high school back in 2018. Basically, the threat amounted to a hate crime, but the administration, the school liaison officer from the VPD, and everybody involved kind of just let it slide. And so community advocates came together in hopes to get some accountability on that, and now it's branched out into other things, and we're working towards making systemic change with a serious focus on helping through education.
I was following for some time the incident in the school through the great reporting that Katie Hislop did at the TAI.
Yes, Katie has been covering that for she's covering a lot of the issues actually that we focus on, including the school liaison officer program as well.
A friend and former colleague of mine, but much respect for her. Let's talk about schools a little bit. I know that there's been a lot of discussion in the last year about why police have liaisons in school, how that relates to members of the Black student community, and why that's a concern. Where are we at with that now?
Well, where we're at is we have heard from multiple sources from the community calling for the immediate end of that program. And instead of ending it, what the VSB's trustees have decided to do is take part in a review of the program. So that was struck last June, and then their request for proposals for a third party to conduct the review was delayed. And they actually only just received their report from their third party organization a couple days ago now.
What is the liaison program?
The school liaison program, the school liaison officer program, is an agreement between the VSB, the Vancouver School Board, and the Vancouver Police Department for the Vancouver Police Department to supply each high school and some elementary schools as well with police officers. And it's really interesting. I think the memorandum of understanding and what the program is designed to do and what it actually amounts to in practice have changed over the years. So initially, from what I understand, is it the officer isn't actually there to provide safety to students, et cetera. It's more so to teach them about the role of police officers and criminal matters, almost like they would be in a classroom or going from class to class and providing education. But that's sometimes, I think, maybe the case in elementary school when they just pop in and they do a presentation, which can still end up being problematic. But, for example, at my high school in Vancouver, the officer was basically patrolling and looking for crime and those types of things. They never came into our class, or at least none of my classes, and presented kind of the role of police and how to engage.
They're more like the eyes of the force in the student population.
Yeah, that's what they've become, which is not what they're intended to be doing, which is very problematic. So there isn't really much oversight either from the schools and the administrators over the handling of SLOs as well.
Yeah, what are some of the big concerns that you've heard and that you've raised about this program?
Some of the main concerns are, and this was actually evident in the reporting, is that students are experiencing racism from the police in schools. That was reported by the review. And they're also hearing about it. And it's making students feel unsafe and uncomfortable in their place of learning. And I think that what is hard for a lot of people in positions of power to contemplate as well, is that those are some examples of like the acute trauma, right? With students having directly negative experiences. The same could be said about the bomb threat incident. The SLO was not helpful, and those students had a negative experience. But for the broader community, those traumas can still be lived through actions that they see on TV, or from their friend. If their friend's been harassed by police or abused by police, or their family for ages, you're not going to feel comfortable walking down the hallway next to an officer with a loaded firearm.
Is there also an aspect of the types of things that they may be looking for would disproportionately impact people of color? I know that in Toronto, for instance, there's a much more significant police presence in schools in largely black neighborhoods and people of color, and tend to pull those students out for different suspicions.
Well, yeah, I think that speaks to the systemic racism. The nature of police is to criminalize black and indigenous people. So they absolutely do target those people more, maybe not intentionally individual or each officer to officer, but the outcome is that exactly. And I believe that Toronto has ended their school liaison officer program because of those types of results. So we're getting those same results out here, where people are becoming criminalized for things that aren't criminal in nature, and it isn't leading to healthy outcomes for black students.
It's just wild to me, but I guess shouldn't be surprising that a program that puts police in schools ostensibly to teach about policing and presumably provide safety would not respond extremely aggressively to a bomb threat or hate speech.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like one of those examples of like under-policed and over-policed.
100%. And what it did in that circumstance, or at least what it may have done, I can't say for certain. But, you know, if you have an officer in a school building relationships with students, then they could develop a bias towards certain students, right? They might say, hey, well, that kid was a good kid. We don't want to charge him because he's a good kid. I know his family. They're good people. They didn't mean it. When that isn't how laws are supposed to be applied, it's not supposed to be biased. It's pretty clear that the words that were said, for example, in the bomb threat incident amount to a hate crime, to the letter. And so I think that the biases formed by the SLO when they went back to the chief of police and recommended against charges may have been formed already, regardless of any attempt at an investigation.
It's so fascinating to hear about that incident in light of, you know, just last week, the Vancouver Police Department was expressing concern that more people weren't coming forward to be willing to report hate crimes and racism. And that was in the context of the 717% spike in anti-Asian hate crimes. And police were saying, you know, we really need people to come forward and talk to us, and seeming to be surprised by why people didn't want to sometimes come forward or feel like it would be useful.
Yeah. And even beyond that, I thought I had seen, and I'm not looking at it right now, so I might be wrong, but I thought I had seen a VPD ad talking about the racism in healthcare and about how it's so terrible that people aren't reporting racism in healthcare. And I was thinking to myself, they're missing the big picture here. We're not even reporting it to police when we're out on the street. And it's because the police aren't taking responsibility for hate. They're not saying that it's something that they're going to pursue seriously. And if we don't get accountability for a hate crime to the letter, then what can we expect for when somebody's harassing you on the street or pushes you? It doesn't build trust with those oppressed and marginalized communities.
It also has sort of an element of victim blaming. Why don't people report this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the police really need to reflect on their role and why that is historically.
This brings me to an incident that happened just a couple weeks ago at a Pizza Pizza in Kitsilano. And these two guys come in, two white men, and they're upset that they're being asked to wear a mask and offered free masks. And so they start berating the servers and say, we're worth $50 million. You're worth nothing. You guys are Nazis. And then they switch and start saying, where are you from? Are you Middle Eastern? Where are you from? And the police have now laid charges for them, but only on them leaving the store and assaulting a teenager who was standing by there. You commented on this on Twitter. What do you make of this whole incident?
I don't have all the facts for that incident. I did make a comment on Twitter saying that the police are oftentimes refusing to take accountability for incidents of hate. And it was specifically what I was speaking to is what was the motivating factor for those two men to go out and assault that random teenage person, Asian person, I should mention, when we've had a 700% spike in random acts of violence against Asians in the city of Vancouver. To me, it appears that that might have been motivated racially, and it could have been motivated in hate. And so I feel that the police aren't connecting those dots. They said, we're going to charge them for assault and for DUI, I think. But they didn't speak to the motivation.
And certainly they'd expressed motivation inside the pizzeria by questioning the ethnicity of the servers.
Yeah, but it's also difficult because of the ways in which you meet the threshold of a hate crime. Why I'm so passionate about the Lord Bing bomb threat incident was because they pointed to an identifiable group. They said they were motivated in hate, and they were promoting harm towards that group. So that kind of ticks all the boxes. I think that we need, for sure,
it meets the threshold.
It meets the threshold. That's right. And so it's already a tough threshold. But you would think that type of incident from the pizza could also meet the threshold, or at least it should. Maybe that's something that we need to look at.
Because it was an assault.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's kind of brings us to like the limitations of our hate speech laws. People think that someone saying racist things is hate speech. But in fact, in Canada, there has to be a crime that's motivated by that. And the motivation only comes into consideration at sentencing. There's only a few actual hate speech crimes in Canada, like genocide denial or incitement to violence.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's difficult when there's such little precedent being set as well. And so it's kind of across the country. We do see some instances where it's being taken seriously and people are being charged. But they're not consistent enough, I think, for most officers to feel comfortable in approaching those situations, or for not even the officers, but the systems, the organizations themselves. You know, what's the precedent? How many hate crimes have the VPD pursued through to charges and successfully? I'd like to know that number. And it might be really reflective as to why we have such a big problem here in Vancouver.
I mean, you mentioned the police having these systemic sort of motivations as a structural level that are anti-Black, anti-Indigenous. Is there anything they can do to increase or improve this trust? Or is this a matter that is sort of baked in?
I think as it is, it's baked in, and that we would have to start to narrow the scope of what policing is for us to start to see some of those results. Because right now, what we're seeing is kind of marginalized groups being overpoliced and being harassed and being bullied, and a big change in power dynamics. So is it in the scope of the police to be doing street checks? Is that something that they should be doing for any reason? I've been stopped 3 times and asked if I stole my own car. And so is that beneficial to our society? I'm not sure. Maybe we should stop them from doing street checks. Maybe we should stop them from being in schools because schools are statistically very safe. Maybe we shouldn't have them over-policing certain areas where there's greater racialized populations. So there's some action there, but it's going to be tough. I think that we've maybe overestimated what police should be doing, and it's going to be hard to convince people, and it's proving to be difficult to convince people that without police, even if we pulled the plug, and I'm not saying that that is what the defund the police movement's about or anything like that, but there's little evidence to say that we would fall into anarchy without police. So I think that we should start to try and build trust in communities throughout all of our institutions, because it doesn't only fall on police, right? They're not taking racism seriously, but neither are education ministries and school boards, and neither is healthcare. And so if all of our institutions take collective responsibility of the issue, I think that the burden will decrease across the board. I think it's going to take systemic changes more than anything to see that result. I don't know if we can say it's going to be one action, but it's going to be multiple legislations from multiple institutions that get us the results that we're looking for.
So sort of multi-systemic, multiple areas of life, basically, looking at the whole structure of white supremacy.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's your kind of gut reaction when you hear about, you know, these continuously swirling incidents attacking different groups of people when they're just minding their own business, you know, working, walking in a parking lot, going to a store, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question, because I feel like I've almost become numb to it, right? It's what we're just so used to seeing it. And we're so used to seeing victims not being protected and the perpetrators becoming the victim. And it's the same story over and over again. So I guess I feel a little bit of frustration. I also feel bad for the victims. Yeah.
It's demoralizing. Like, it's like it's more than just a one-off incident, because it says something about the society and how it treats you.
Yeah. And with demoralization, I think for groups of people who aren't reflected in positions of power come sentiments of disenfranchisement, right? Is who do racialized groups get to go to report these incidences? And that person's going to say, okay, I'll take care of it. Is we can't go to the police. We can't go to our principals. We can't go to our boss. And so that's why I was saying it's not only going to take police, it's going to take legislative change in a number of institutions for us to have a collective will to address these issues.
We're coming up on the 1 year anniversary of the pandemic being declared. And also this summer, you know, the 1 year mark since the, you know, global uprising against anti-Black racism, the latest wave of that, at least. Is there anything that you wanted to reflect on about this year past and maybe some of the gains that have been made?
I think that I can reflect on the fact that people's language is starting to change, and we're starting to address the issue theoretically. And it's like in the budding phase, right? We haven't seen, or maybe it's even a sprout, you know, we planted the seed in people's mind, but we're not sure what that sprout's going to amount to. Is it going to be a tree, a shrub, a flower? There's still a lot of work to be done for leaders to prove that they're seeking long-term change that's going to benefit people's lives.
Hmm. Well, anything else you wanted to add, Markiel?
No, I don't think so. I think you asked a lot of great questions.
Thank you so much for taking the time. It's an honor to speak with you, and I hope you come back on again.
Absolutely. Anytime. Thank you so much for the invite.
Markiel Simpson is an organizer with the BC Community Alliance.
CFRO The Pulse is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, a program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.